And I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken to me. So they said, let us rise up and build. Then they set their hands to do this good work. I usually say it's certainly good to be here. This morning it's a little extra certainly good to be here. We were blessed to be able to have a location to rent for the last month for our services, but it's good to be back here in our building. As I mentioned last Sunday, I thought I would talk about the story of Nehemiah rebuilding the walls, how that would be appropriate. It's a different situation, but I think there are some lessons that we can learn from this as we are moving back in and changing and rebuilding some things. So the first question is, who was Nehemiah? Nehemiah was a young Hebrew among the Jews of the dispersion. He was a cupbearer for Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. He had the responsibility of tasting the wine and food for the king to make sure that the king would not be poisoned. And while he was serving as cupbearer, Nehemiah learned that the walls of Jerusalem had been broken down and the gates of the city had been burned. Again, to put this in perspective, with Nehemiah, in the time when we go back to our Old Testament study, we have Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, the books. We have the Persian Empire kings, Cyrus, Artaxerxes, Ahasuerus. Cyrus is Ezra 1. Chapter 1, Artaxerxes, Nehemiah chapter 2, Ahasuerus, Esther 1. So these are the kings that were reigning during this time. And remember, there were three returns from when the Jews were in captivity to when they went back to Jerusalem. There is the return home under the leadership of Zerubbabel. That was the first group of captives that came back to build the temple. And then, just logically thinking, once the temple was built, Ezra returns with the priests to start the spiritual reform. They have the temple rebuilt, and now they can start worshiping again. And then the third return was Nehemiah returns to build the walls to protect the city. So when permission was granted by the king, Nehemiah went to Jerusalem. He surveyed the walls, obtained the needed materials for restoration, and he explained to the people that with the help of God, the wall could be rebuilt. Again, friends, we see the providence of God in the situation that happened here and how we are able to be back in here. Definitely it was by the work of men's hands here, but it was also by the providence of God that we have been able to come back. Nehemiah accepted the destruction of Jerusalem as a personal responsibility, for he sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. It touched him personally. He didn't say, well, we'll let somebody else take care of that. It touched him personally. Friends, this was a huge job to rebuild the walls of the city. The reason for this great accomplishment of him doing this is to be found in the statement, the people had a mind to work. And we are blessed with a group of people here that are willing to work. You can visit different congregations and there's a different feeling, a different spirit from one to another. We have a very loving, caring, working congregation here. We should be so thankful for that. With many things, as with the destruction of Jerusalem and the walls and the gates, we look out there and we see that's where the problem is. That's where the battle is. But where the battle is really is in our mind. Because if we don't have the mind to work, nothing is going to take place. We've got to conquer this battle in our mind and say, let us rise up and build. What could we accomplish right here if we had the same mind. We built the walls, the people had a mind to work, neither I nor my brethren nor my servants nor the men, nor the men of the guard which followed me. None of us put off our clothes, saving that everyone put them off for washing. Nehemiah 4, 6 and verse 23. That would have been a bunch of stinky men, but they just kept working till their clothes were so dirty they had to take them off and wash them. But they wanted to do the work. So what could we accomplish right here if we had that same mind? Today we have a great job to do also, and we can look to Nehemiah as an example. We come together, as we talked about in class, to exhort one another, to stir one another up unto love and good works, to get to the work. But not everyone responds to that. Why is it that everyone does not respond to that? Sometimes the reason is because people do not have a mind to work. They want to let somebody else do it. And we understand some people are not able to because of their age, their physical abilities. But I really appreciate the elderly that pray for us. And I know people here probably don't like to be called elderly as we're all getting older. I appreciate those Christians with years of maturity and growth that pray the prayers that they do. Because, friends, that's something else that helps us win the battle, whatever the battle might be. So some people don't have a mind to work. What are the different types of minds that the Bible describes? Some of them are negative, like in Romans 12, 11, not lagging in diligence. So there's a slothful mind, a lazy mind. Hebrews 6, 12 talks about a sluggish mind, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit promises. Some have a zealous mind, Titus 2:14, who gave himself up for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works. If we are Christians, if we are followers of Christ, we expect to do work, we want to do work, and we should be zealous toward doing that. What is the cure for the wrong type of mind? Well, we need to repent and pray. We need to repent and pray if we have a mind of laziness. We don't want to be like the one talent man that went out and buried his talent. The Lord called him a wicked and slothful servant. And the Lord listed his fate as he was cast into outer darkness, where there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Well, when we look at Nehemiah, what are some of the lessons that we can learn today? We can learn that we can do all that God desires of us if we will recognize the importance of the work and need to be personally involved in doing it. Friends, I've heard over and over people say it, and I will say it also, we are involved in the greatest work there is on earth. We are involved in the greatest work that we can ever be involved in here on this earth. You think about executives and companies, people that make tons of money. Friends, that doesn't mean anything if they are not involved in the work of the Lord. It still doesn't mean anything, but the greatest work there is working for the Lord. And we can, when once we recognize that, we're going to get busy, and me personally, is going to be involved in whatever way I can be involved, in whatever way you can be involved. We can all be involved, and we are in different ways. Some have some skills and abilities. Some have other skills and abilities. We all work together. We all pray together. We have our prayer service coming up Wednesday. We have so much to pray for. just as Nehemiah and a few of the people could have not completed the wall in the required time, neither can just a few of God's people do all the work to be done in the time that we have. Everybody joined in with Nehemiah to do the work, and they accomplished it. Friends, all of us need to recognize that we all need to do whatever we are able to do, even if it's supporting and recognizing and thanking someone for doing something that we are not able to do. Everybody needs encouragement. Everybody. We need to have that mind to work. Each of us needs to have a mind to work. You hear people today talking about how hard they have to work at their jobs, at their secular jobs, and sometimes they'll make fun about people at work that try to get out of work. They goof off, they go and they hide. But you'll hear people talk about how hard they work at their secular job, but then you don't hear them talking about how much they work for the Lord. And a lot of times those men that are consumed in their secular job are not involved in much of the work of the Lord. If they have all those talents and abilities to do everything out there for somebody else, why not take some of those talents and abilities to use for the Lord? I've talked about a neighbor, and we saw someone else that knows a person a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about him, and I had mentioned before we hired him to do a job, and he said, "Bruce, I'll work 24 hours a day, 6 days a week for you, but I'm not going to work on Sunday. I go to church on Sunday. I'm not going to work on Sunday." And he was had a very strong work ethic, but he was going to put God above secular work. He was going to put God above money. He would have made more money working on Sundays, but he chose not to. He chose to put God first. We hear people talking about work. Friends, we all need to work together. We need to support each other working together. We need to encourage each other working together. So what was the secret of them accomplishing this great work? Did they have strong men or a really good plan? The secret was in the hearts of the people. They had a heart to work. You think about another occasion after Moses received instructions from God about building the tabernacle. The people were to give all sorts of things to be used in the building of it, in the construction of it. And the people gave so much that they had to be restrained. The attitude of the people was described in Exodus 35 and verse 21. "Everyone whose heart was stirred him up, and everyone whom his spirit made willing." And they had such a mind, and they gave so freely, that they had to be stopped because they were giving too much. Exodus 36, 5 through 7. What could we accomplish if we had that same mind? To every Christian is given many opportunities to be cupbearers for the Lord. And you stop and think about being a cupbearer. That would be, it was a serious position, but it was a lowly position. What do you do? Oh, I taste the drinks for the king, to make sure it's okay. But he was just a cupbearer. Every Christian is given many opportunities to be just a cupbearer for the Lord. Responsibilities to these opportunities vary according to our abilities. Whatever place we occupy in the Lord's work, we would benefit greatly by following the pattern of Nehemiah's life. So, what are some things that we can notice about Nehemiah. Notice that he was responsible and committed. I have to ask myself that question today. Am I responsible? Am I committed? What does every Christian need? True commitment without reservation. And again, it goes back to our heart. It goes back to the Old Testament. It goes back to the book of Deuteronomy. The first and greatest commandment, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength. And the second is like unto it, to love your neighbor as yourself. We have to be committed to God without reservation. When you find a congregation successfully leading lost souls to Christ, you have found a congregation of responsible and committed, zealous Christians who have committed themselves wholeheartedly to the service of God. And again, we are doing a very good job of reaching people. We need to translate that into the next step to get more of them to come in through the door, to be able to set up Bible studies. We had requests for 2 Bible studies last month. They were not locally, but I'm saying that to point out people are noticing us. They are noticing what we put out for them to read. We need to keep praying that will translate into people coming and we can make contact with them. Like the followers of Nehemiah, this congregation should cry out, let us rise up and build. Let us rise up and build. We've got a good group. And we don't have what I'm going to mention here. We don't have people making excuses. We don't have people making complaints. I don't think anybody here is afraid of doing anything. I don't think anybody here is wrapped up in the things of the world. We just have to consistently do the Lord's work every day. It's just like having a job. First thing you got to do is you got to show up. Second thing you got to do is do your job. Woe unto us if our inactivity would lead God to repeat the rebuke of Isaiah 56. His watchmen are blind, they are without knowledge. They are all dumb dogs, they cannot bark. Dreaming, lying down, loving to slumber. They love to sleep. Christians must be like the watchmen set upon the walls of Jerusalem. In Isaiah 62, they shall never hold their peace day or night. You are that are Jehovah's remembrances. Take ye no rest. We've got to always be looking for opportunities, always be ready and willing to share the gospel. Again, Jesus gave himself for us to be a people zealous of good works, Titus 2:14. What should we notice about Nehemiah? Notice that he prayed earnestly. The comfort, security, and worldly good fortune of Nehemiah's high office in the court of this Persian king did not distract him from doing God's work. He prayed day and night. You think about this. Nehemiah, when he was in the king's court, he couldn't do what he wanted to do, but he did what he could do. He prayed to God day and night. Again, that's a Hebrewism, a repeated activity, a repeated motion over and over and over. Nehemiah 1:6, for his brethren and for himself. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. We can pray that. Lord, strengthen my hands that I might be able to do your work. And let us not be afraid, but recognize that we can do all things in him that strengthens me. Philippians 4:13. When we say, I can't do that, I just can't do that, we need to read Philippians 4:13. Paul said we can do all things. Nehemiah 6:9, for they were all saying and trying to make us afraid, saying their hands will be weakened in the work and it will not be done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. So when they were doing the work, they had naysayers, they had opposition. What did Nehemiah do? He prayed more to God to strengthen us. And you think about Nehemiah's prayer. It's a model for Christians. It contained adoration, chapter 1 and verse 5. He earnestly entreated God. Again, this is all in Nehemiah 1, 5 through about 11. He entreated God earnestly. He had a humble confession to God. He had powerful pleas to God. And he had a particular request. No Christian who earnestly and sincerely prays in behalf of his efforts for God can approach that task in a half-hearted manner. So you think about when you have something to do, think of just about anything. And you're praying to God, I've got this job to do, God, whatever this job is, I've got this job to do. You put your whole heart into that prayer, praying to God over and over and over. When you go out to do that job, are you going to do it half-hearted? No, because you've been praying to God all that time that He would bless you in that. Someone has said that the faith that prays is the faith that works. The faith that prays is the faith that works. What I've heard over the years, the farmer's motto is, pray like it depends on God and hoe like it depends on man. You pray to God and you go out, but you got to do the work. You're the instrument that does the work. Nehemiah did not satisfy himself with prayer and fasting like Isaiah, but like Isaiah, what did Isaiah say? He said, here am I, send me. Jesus approached the greatest trial of all in fervent prayer, John 17. Paul admonishes us to pray without ceasing, 1 Thessalonians 5:17. And again, I think our prayer services are one of the things that sets the spirit of this congregation apart from others, because we all come together and open up our hearts to pray for one another. And that brings us closer, it draws us closer to one another. And it opens up doors where people are willing to help with any and every problem, trouble, or good thing that comes along with one another, because we are the family of God. Ephesians 3:20, God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. And a lot of times we fall on our face because we don't even ask or think. We just go through words over and over, and we don't ask for enough. We don't think about what to pray to God enough. But Paul told the Ephesians, God is able to do exceedingly, abundantly, above all that we ask or think. We ask for something down here. God's able to do something up here. And then we wonder, woe is me, why doesn't God do anything for me, when we should have our sights set up here, exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. So, what should we notice about Nehemiah? He, like Isaiah said, here am I, send me. He set goals for himself and made plans. So I have to ask myself, you have to ask yourself, what are your goals? What are your plans to help the church? What are your goals? What are your plans to help the church here in New Lebanon? The reports that came to Nehemiah clouded his life in Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 2 and 4. But he was not defeated. In addition to prayer and fasting, what did he do? Sit down and twiddle his thumbs? No. Nehemiah made plans to restore the city. The gears were turning in his head. He was heartbroken when he heard the condition. He did not sit back and wait for his brethren to do something. He did not say, well, let's just wait and see what happens. He did not try to pass off responsibility to others because he was young and hundreds of miles detached from Jerusalem, or because he was hindering responsibilities to the king of Persia. No, Nehemiah decided to do something himself about the deplorable situation in Jerusalem. First, he prayed for mercy in the sight of the king in Nehemiah 1:11. Though he was afraid, he made a request which fear would have stopped many from making leave of absence from the king's support to Judah. You just think, if you were in the palace, and again, they would take young boys in. They were generally made into eunuchs to serve in the palace, but they would take young boys in to serve, and then you have this job, we'll call it a food service job, and I'm not putting down food service, but I'm just to get the picture in our minds. And then he says, I ought to ask the king if I can leave. I ought to ask the king if I can go back to my homeland, the land of my fathers, back to Judah, because the city's been destroyed, the walls are torn down, and they need rebuilt. But what's the king going to say? He might not like my request, and he might say, off with your head. He would have had fear, just like we would. But again, when we have fear, what do? We don't let fear stop us from acting. We act in the face of fear. The enemies of Israel laughed at what appeared to be meager efforts. They mocked and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? If a fox go up, he will break down their stone wall. Nehemiah 4, 2 and verse 3. The onlookers were saying that you don't know what you're doing. You can't build a wall. A fox could run up on it and your wall would tumble down. They were mocking them, trying to get them to stop the work. Did they stop? No. Why? Because the people had a mind to work, and it was a great work because it was God's work. And you stop and think about that. What is a great work? Anything that God wants us to do, anything that God tells us to do, is a great work. People in the world might not think that, but we aren't going to answer to people in the world on the day of judgment. Colossians 1, verses 10 through 12, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, being fruitful in every good work, increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might according to His glorious power, for all patience and long-suffering with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in the light. There's another congregation that I'm thinking of, and one of the men stands out in my mind, and whenever I would walk through those doors, he would be at the doors coming into the auditorium. He'd always stand right there and shake everybody's hand and say hello and talk to them for a minute. Every time. You go and visit anytime, Nat, you know who I'm talking about. He'd stand there in the door. He'd shake everybody's hand. Is that a big job? I think it was a big job. Nobody else did that. He was that smiling face. People might not look on it and look at what a great job he's doing. He just did his work quietly with a smile on his face. And I will always remember him for that. What should we notice about Nehemiah? Notice he became thoroughly engrossed in his work. Those who wanted to hinder the Lord's progress, Nehemiah said, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down whilst I leave it and come down to you. Nehemiah 6:3. People might put us down for being a little church and you're just doing that and you're doing this and you aren't doing that. Friends, whatever we do for the Lord is a great work. When has the Lord's cause ever been free from opposition? There's always going to be opposition face the church. Some Christians have made shipwreck of the faith because they did not handle a situation correctly, or there is something to do or work to be involved in, and they threw up their hands and left. Some places seek peace and compromise, and that's not good either, because we need to stand for the truth. Nehemiah had a proper balance. He had a purpose, he had a goal, he had a plan. This was a good work, and the accomplishment of that purpose was first and uttermost in his life. What's our purpose in life? We need to stop and ask ourselves that. Again, all these things in the world that we get wrapped up in, I'm not saying those things are wrong, but what is our purpose? Again, back to class, like a steering wheel, and there's four hands on it. You're going all over the place and you'll probably end up in the ditch. What is our purpose? Where are we headed? Are we making progress going there? Nehemiah did not waste his time seeking a fight with the Sanballats of his day, but he courageously fought any opposition to that purpose. So we need to ask ourselves, I need to ask myself, am I responsible and committed like Nehemiah? Do I pray earnestly like Nehemiah? Do I set goals and plans like Nehemiah? Do I become engrossed in the Lord's work like Nehemiah? Do I have the proper balance in my life like Nehemiah by putting God first? And friends, if God isn't first in your life is going to be out of balance. Just like I was talking about that wheel of life and those spokes, it's going to be like a tire that's going down a bumpy road. We aren't going to have a smooth ride, and we're going to end up in the ditch. Friends, we've got to put God first, and we ought to want to put God first. He's done everything for us. He has loved us. He has protected us. He's made a covenant relationship for us that we can be born into his family, be baptized and be born into his family to have an inheritance that is incorruptible, that will never pass away, that no matter what we go through in this life, if we put God first, he's going to take care of us for time without end. And not just take care of us, but we can enjoy the blessings and what he has prepared for us, waiting for us on the other side. Friends, if there's anyone here this morning that needs prayers, needs to make confession, needs to respond to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.